So we're continuing our series going through Hebrews 11, looking at some of the individuals who are commended for their faith. I spend quite a lot of my time thinking about the best way to live out my faith, to take what I believe and put it into practice and what that looks like. And I think we should all be doing that. I think we should all be thinking about how do we put into practice the things that we believe. This is a passage on faith, but it's really what we find. We're given a list of things that these characters, not what they believed, but what they did. We're given examples of how they lived, how their faith was made real, the kind of things they did. I think one of the things we often need to struggle against is a subconscious view, which can sometimes be in the church or just in the world generally, is that faith is really just about the things you think, the things you believe. Do you have faith means do you believe. Do you have faith in God means do you believe in God. You know, you have a checklist of beliefs. Do you believe in God? Yes, I tick that. Do you believe Jesus is the Son of God? Yes, I tick that. Do you believe Jesus died for your sins and rose from the dead on the third day? Yes, I tick that. And if you can tick all those things, you have faith. But the Bible never really talks about faith in those terms, just purely in terms of what you believe, like things, doctrinal truths you can tick off. James chapter 2, from verse 14 onwards, argues quite strongly against this idea that faith is purely to do with what you believe. He says in verse 19, you believe there is one God? Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. Faith in Hebrews 11, at the beginning of the chapter, we're told faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And if you are sure of something or unsure about something, it will find a way of coming out in the way that you live. For example, if you're standing thinking about crossing some train tracks, if you are sure and certain the train is not coming, you will cross. If you are unsure, if you're not certain, if you don't know if the train is coming, you might be hesitant. You may not cross. You may stay on the side of the tracks. If you're sure that God will provide for your needs, if you're sure that God will honor those who honor him, if you're sure that God rewards those who earnestly seek him, you will live one way. If you are uncertain about those things, if you're not sure about those things, you will live another way. You can't help it from coming out in your life. It will be something that is made real. And the characters in Hebrews 11, Abel we've heard about already, Enoch we've heard about, Noah we're thinking about today, Abraham and Sarah and all the others who get mentioned, they lived a certain way according to the author of Hebrews. They did certain things because they were sure of what they hoped for, certain of what they did not see. And yet they had no way of sort of knowing that that was how things were going to be. That's kind of the nature of faith. You don't have faith in something that has already sort of happened. You have faith in something that will happen. This is the way the author of Hebrews puts it. They were sure and certain, even though they couldn't be sure and certain, but they decided to live as though it was sure and certain, that God would keep his promises. That's essentially what Hebrews 11 is about, that God is going to keep his promises. God is, you know, this is an old image now, you know, it probably worked when I first started preaching all those years ago, but, you know, when God writes a check, it will not bounce. This is the certainty that these Old Testament characters have. What's the equivalent? Oz, what would be the equivalent these days? I don't know. Standing order, that's almost as bad. PayPal, yeah, something like that. PayPal, you know, God's got money in his PayPal anyway. We're getting sidetracked. But interestingly, when we get to verse 13 in Hebrews, one of the things it says is all these people, having listed all these people, Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, all those, it says all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. So this is kind of like even worse. It's not just a case of, well, faith is hoping something will eventually happen. Faith is hoping that something will happen, even though you may not live to see it. This is the faith presented in Hebrews 11. And Abraham is a good example of this. Abraham is promised by God that he will be a father of a nation that would bless the whole world. So Abraham's life revolved around the fact that God had promised that this was what was going to happen. The decisions he made, where he went, the things he did, and we'll hear about that in the coming weeks, revolved around the fact that God had given him a promise that he was going to be the father of a nation that would bless the whole world. But of course, he died before he saw his children become a nation. He's just still had a handful of children. Well, Isaac, and when he died, sort of died, and grandchildren or whatever. But he did not see the ultimate fulfillment of the promise that God had made, which, as we will know, is ultimately through Jesus, who came through from the nation that Abraham was the father of, and the author of Hebrews is saying that Jesus is the ultimate fulfillment of God's promise. And yet all these men and women who lived by faith did not live to see that, and yet they still lived by faith. They still trusted that God would keep his promises. Now, if you feel uncertain, if you feel unsure, that's kind of the point of faith, really. That I think it's perfectly natural to have that question, have those doubts, if you say, is this really going to happen? Is God really going to come through? Is God really going to keep his promises? I think that's a part of what having faith is. I don't think doubt is necessarily a huge danger, or even the opposite of faith, as we may some think. I think the real threat to faith, I think the real opposite of faith is actually fear. Because it is fear that stops us from living as though these things are true. It's fear that it's nothing wrong with saying, is this true? Faith is the decision to say, well, I'm going to live as though it's true. I'm going to live as though it's sure and it's certain. And it's fear that stops us from living that way. Fear is the real enemy. The life of faith is essentially a gamble. It's a risk. You are betting that God is going to come through for you. You are betting that God is going to keep his promises. And you are going to live that way, as though it's a sure thing, even to the end of your life, even if you don't necessarily see all those promises fulfilled. This is what it means to have faith. And if you are sure and certain, that will bleed out in the way you live. You can't stop it from happening. It will happen. So, from watching your life, people observing your life, what would they say you were sure of? What would they say you were certain of? What is it in your life that reflects what you have faith in, or what you don't have faith in? When I was in Australia, I met a couple of young men called Tim and Dave. And Tim and Dave's story was quite interesting. They were 18. They finished school. They'd done their HSC, I think it is in Australia. They'd finished school and they'd reached that point. What do we do next? And their friends were going off to university or getting jobs or things like that, which is what normal sort of 18-year-olds do. These guys said they were going to take some time out. Now, taking a year out, that's also a normal activity. But these two men, Tim and Dave, they said, we are going to take a year out. We're not going to work. We're not going to travel, see the world. We are just going to go walkabout, is what they'd call it in Australia. We are going to hitchhike across Australia. We are going to go into the wilderness. We're going to fast, and we are going to seek God and say, God, we're at a crossroads in our life. What do you want from us? This is what they decided to do when they reached 18. That was seen as quite an unusual thing to do, a very odd thing to do. None of their friends were doing it. None of the people in their church were doing it. Why did they do this? Why did they do this ridiculous thing? Because they believed in Hebrews 11 verse 6, which Oz spoke on a couple of weeks ago. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So Dave and Tim decided to put this into practice. We are going to seek God, they said, and they just headed out, not knowing where they would end up, not knowing what God would say to them or where he would lead them. They believed that he would reward those who earnestly sought him. And did he reward them? Did they get their reward? Well, I think most certainly they did, because they met me while they were on their journey. And what greater reward can there be? But their lives went in a very different direction to their friends and what they even anticipated. One that they would be thankful for, I think, in terms of where they ended up, who they ended up meeting, who they ended up marrying, what they ended up doing. It all started from this decision to just head out and see what God did, to live as though they were sure and certain that God would honour that God would meet them when they went out. Well, now we are finally, you'll be pleased to hear, getting to the example of Noah. I'm going to start talking about Noah. This is not one of, I don't know if you've ever heard a sermon where the preacher has spoken for half an hour and then said, now I come to my first point. This is not one of those sermons. Don't worry, we are fairly far in according to my notes. We finally reached the story of Noah. So we've heard the story of Noah. Alice read the part of the story anyway. Noah's an interesting story. There's all kinds of things you can read about it and commentaries and look in the history and unravel it and think about it. But I'm just going to think about it through the eyes of Hebrews 11. What the author of Hebrews 11 is trying to say in this. What he does, he doesn't hold Noah up as some kind of moral tale or, you know, anything like that. He says, look, Noah is an example of faith. Noah is an example of someone who was sure of what he hoped for, certain of what he did not see. So the question is, where is that in Noah's story? Where does this faith ground itself in his life? Well, Hebrews, the verse we read, tells us Noah was warned of what was to come. God was told him what was going to happen. And that we know the story, you know, you have probably heard, if you've been in church a while, you may have heard it in Sunday school, you know, Noah builds a boat and gathers the animals and all that kind of thing. For some people, faith, we speak of faith in positive terms, I suppose, as we probably should. It's a strength, it's a comfort. It's something we lean on, you know. My faith is a source of strength to me. People say things like that. It helps us feel better about the world. You know, we can lean into our faith when things aren't going so well. But when I read Hebrews 11, I get the distinct impression that faith is something that makes life harder. Faith is something that makes life harder. And certainly I think in my life, that's how I feel, that following Jesus, that decision to follow Jesus I made when I was a teenager, I don't regret it for a second, but it's made my life so much harder. So much harder than it could have been. But I wouldn't swap it for anything. It's strange, isn't it? And that kind of doesn't make sense to people. Why would you embrace something difficult, painful and hard and yet say, I'm so thankful for it, and I wouldn't swap it for anything? But this is what faith is. This is what it means to be a Hebrews 11 man or woman, to embrace faith and to embrace a life that makes you live differently, that makes you stand out. Faith makes you stronger, yes, but I think faith makes you stranger. This is an odd story, the story of Noah. God says, you know, Noah, I've seen your righteousness. I'm making a covenant with you. You are going to be okay. Now, God being God could have just maybe kept a patch of dry land around Noah's house. He could have plucked Noah and all the animals up and put them on the top of mountains or whatever he wanted to do. But he says, no, I want you to build a boat, a huge boat. This is a strange thing to ask. But it's kind of, I suppose, making this point that the author of Hebrews is making, that James makes, is the faith is never really a passive thing. God does not really ever say, you know what, it's okay for you to just believe in me. That's all right. That's all I ask. God says, if you believe, this is what I want you to do. This is how I want you to live. I want you to actually do something. I want you to impact the world. I want you to build my kingdom. I don't want you to sit and do nothing and console yourself with the fact that, you know, well, I believe in God, so that's good. I believe in Jesus. I believe he's the Son of God who died for my sins. That's good. That's all that God asks of me. No, faith is never a passive thing. And God says to Noah, I want you to build a boat. I want you to build this giant boat. And the thing to remember, of course, is that it wasn't raining when Noah started building. It wasn't raining when Noah got his tools and all the wood and then got the plans out. It looks strange, surely. This looks strange. This looks odd. This is not a normal thing to do, to build a boat in your back garden when there's not a cloud in the sky. But Noah is acting, says Hebrews, in faith. He's faith. He's building a boat based on what? Based on the fact that God has said, Noah, it's going to start raining. And this is what I want you to do. Faith, I think, should make us do odd things. Like Dave and Tim heading off into the wilderness. Should make us look strange, unusual to the world around us. Maybe not, you know, build a boat in your garden strange. Maybe not that strange. But something about us should stand out, should be different. Should be unusual. Our neighbour should look at us and say, why are they doing that? It's not even raining. We shouldn't fit in. There's a quote I like that I keep coming back to. I find it an encouragement and a challenge by a woman called Dorothy Day. Can we have that up on the screen, can we? This is, I've used it before in a sermon. I'll keep using it probably till the day I die. It's a good one. To be a witness, she says, does not consist in engaging in propaganda or even stirring people up, but in being a living mystery. It means to live in such a way that one's life would not make sense if God did not exist. I think that's a fantastic way. You imagine that, waking up saying, you know what, today I'm going to live in such a way that my life makes no sense to the people around me unless God is real. Unless God is real and he keeps his promise. That's the only way people can make sense of my life. People can look at my life and think all kinds of things, but the only thing that will make my life make sense to other people is if God is real and keeps his promises. If people look at your life and it looks like everyone else's life, what are you doing? Your life should look odd. It should look strange. It should look unusual in some way. Dave and Tim, when they decided to take that time out to seek God, it looked strange. It looked unusual. It looked odd. Even people in their church thought they were fools, thought they were strange, thought they were doing something ridiculous. But it didn't look strange to God. Didn't look odd to him. Because they had decided to live in such a way that only made sense if God was real. This is the life of faith. It means not fitting in. It means not feeling like you're at home in this place. It means being strange and not just strange. It means being strangers. The author of Hebrews goes on to say in the rest of verse 7, Noah's faith condemned the world. Again, this is an odd thing. The story says, you know, well, it's God who condemns the world. It's God who says, who makes the judgment and says, people are in rebellion. I'm going to act because people are rebelling against me. In what ways does Noah's faith condemn the world? Well, if you could just imagine for a second, I'm going to see some of you will be able to imagine this. Some of you will struggle. We'll see how you get on. I'm not going to take a quiz or anything like that, you know. Just imagine living in a world for a second where everything is green. Right, maybe different shades of green, so you can tell the difference between a car and a road, for example. But everything is green. And then someone comes along and says, hey, I've got something to show you. And they show you something, and they say, I call it blue. And this, wow, blows your mind. You have never seen blue before. Everything is green. That's all you've known ever since you were born. And now this guy turns up with something called blue. And when you see something blue in a world of green, what it says to you is, you know what? Things don't have to be green. There is an alternative. Things don't have to be this way. For me, personally, a little exercise I once did is I thought, how can I try? This is the kind of thing I do. I thought one day, you know, what can I try and sum up the gospel, the whole of the gospel, in one pithy little phrase, you know, a phrase that will apply in any situation. If someone said, what can you explain the gospel to me? Whatever their position, whatever situation they are in. And I came up with one. I don't know if it's any good or not, but I quite like it. I think the heart of the gospel for everyone is simply this. Life does not have to be this way. I think that's what Jesus brings. Life doesn't have to be this way. And if everyone around you is in rebellion, then it's tempting to think that rebellion is the natural state of things. That's all there is. Everyone else is doing it. That's normal. Like being a fish in water. Water is all you know. But a life of faith says there is a different way to live. There's an alternative that exposes the lie that, you know, well, this is just the way things are, so you have to live this way. You have to fit in. You have to get on with things. Faith is based on hope, and hope is the enemy of that lie that says, well, you know what, this is just the way things are. They can't be any different. And this is just who I am. I can't be any different. Faith is the lie of faith is the enemy of the lie that we are powerless to stand in the way that things are. We can't do it. We think, you know, if you're standing in the river, you think you have no choice to be swept along by the current. Where it's a current that says, you know, if it feels good, do it. That's how life is supposed to be lived. The current that says, you know, anyone who thinks different to you is your enemy. The current that says the goal is to acquire the most stuff. And we might think we have no choice. We're standing in the river. The current is too strong. But the life of faith, the life of faith is a life that plants its feet as deep as it can into that riverbed and says, okay, well, you're coming this way. That's fine. But you're going to have to go around me because I am not moving. And when you show people that they don't have to be swept along by the river, when you show people that the river can go around them, then you take away the excuse they have that, you know, they have no choice. And some people will be inspired by your example and others will be made angry because you've exposed their excuse, their sin. And this is how Noah's faith condemns the world, because his choice to be righteous in a world that is unrighteous demonstrates that rebellion is not the only choice. But it makes his life harder. It makes it hard for him to live. But he did it anyway. He did it anyway. Because he was different. And we do it anyway because we're different. Not just superficially. Not just in the fact that, you know, an hour a week, an hour and a half a week we go to church. Not just in the fact that our language is a bit different to other people. But because our heart is oriented towards something totally different. Because we are sure of things that they are not, certain of things that they do not see. And it is an uncomfortable place to be. But we do it because we are sure of what we hope for. We are certain of what we do not see. We do it because we are aliens and strangers on earth. We do it because we are longing for a better country, looking forward to a city whose architect and builder is God. We do it because one day we're convinced it's going to start raining.